day, radio listeners. It's time for Pure Sex Radio. This is the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles and learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction. And get serious about purity. Your hosts are Jonathan Daugherty, director of Be Broken Ministries, and Steven Cervantes, founder of Hope Counseling Center. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Steven on Pure Sex Radio.
Welcome back, radio listeners, to this week's broadcast of the Pure Sex Radio program. We are going to pick up where we left off last week. This is the second part of a two-part series on confession and repentance. So let's join the broadcast where we left off last week. I remember just dumping all my junk on my wife one night. Just kind of had reached my breaking point. Didn't want to have anything else to do with this. Didn't want to be divided anymore. But I went about it in a very poor way. I really just unloaded the dump truck on her and didn't care for her emotions at all. I just had no concern for her because I was so self-consumed. I just wanted to get rid of all this junk that I was carrying. So I unloaded on her, and quite honestly, I felt a little better. I mean, at the moment, I felt like, hey, I'm not carrying this junk around anymore. She, of course, is dying right. Because she's getting all this new information. Hmm. But I felt better for a moment. But you know what I learned?
But you're clean for a moment. You're open for a moment.
I was lighter for a moment. But here's what I learned. I learned that confession alone doesn't change a person. Because, see, what happened was I dumped all that stuff on her. I confessed it all to her. Mm. But within a week, I was in bed with another woman again. Because, see, I had not put confession together with repentance. See, I just thought, hey, if I just unload all this stuff, if I'm just not carrying this stuff around anymore, then all is going to be better. I'm just going to be great. And you know what? I hear this from guys all the time, Stephen. I hear these guys that say, well, hey, now, you know, all my junk is out there. Everything's going to be fine now, right? And I always have to look at him and say, yeah, if you will walk in repentance. And that's what I learned through this process, is I learned, and by the way, when I was in bed with that other woman, I came home, as I'm walking through the front door, my wife's walking out. And she made the right decision by getting out of that emotionally dangerous situation. But that was the catalyst for me to understand that confession without repentance doesn't change a person.
Well, and define repentance, because you defined confession.
Well, repentance.
What are you saying? What are the steps and thoughts that go with that second part?
Well, confession is essentially you're agreeing with truth. You know what? I'm going to call things as they are. I'm going to confess the things that I have done. And it's a matter of just agreeing with truth. Repentance takes that confession and then says, I'm going to turn away from those things which have drawn me away from truth. So it's like repentance is kind of the next step. It's saying, okay, I've confessed that I have, lusted after pornography. But now what I'm going to do in the act of repentance is turn away from that pornography, turn away from those things that draw me in towards that pornography. That's the act of repentance. And when you put those two together, it's a powerful thing for recovery and purity. But if you think that confession alone is going to somehow magically change your life in terms of how you behave, how you think, how you believe, it doesn't really work that way.
Well, and it seems like confession is a one-time, it may take a few times, but mostly a one-time throw-up experience, and then you've confessed. But you're describing repentance as a process.
It's something we walk in, because it has a connotation of turning away from. So there's an activity involved in it. Whereas confession is kind of like, yeah, you're kind of regurgitating all this garbage that's inside of you. But then repentance is, okay, now that I've kind of purged myself, I'm now going to take an action step of turning away from those things that created all this garbage in my life. So that's kind of what happened. My wife, when she left, that was really the kick in the teeth that I needed to see the reality of what my sin had done, to see the reality of how far this addiction had taken me and how much it affected my relationship. See, I used to think, as many men do, I'm not hurting anybody. You know, hey, what I'm doing on my own secretive time is not really affecting anyone else. And when my wife walked out that door, I realized in a very real way how powerfully that was affecting her. Even if she didn't know everything that was going on specifically, I realized that what I did in private did affect how my relationships operated, how healthy my relationships were or unhealthy they were. And so I began to get help for my addiction, because I realized that even if my marriage didn't work out, I carry this stuff around with me wherever I go. So even if this relationship doesn't work, I still got to get help for this, because it's something that is mine. And so that was the first time in my life where I really took ownership of my junk and realized that, yes, this is mine. As ugly as it is, this is me. And I got to start where I'm at, and then we will take one step at a time in getting the help that I need to recover. And that, you know, there was a nine-month period there where my wife and I were separated. And that was a huge growth period for both of us. Not only me with getting involved in addiction recovery, but for her in being involved in just the healing process that she needed to go through in order to be able to ultimately get to a place of forgiveness, of grief, and of being able to finally say, okay, what has been lost is lost, but we can build on something new. And that's ultimately where God took us, was through our individual brokenness. We were able to then come back together after 9 months and begin to build on a new foundation that to this day, really, that foundation is still built on our brokenness. Because one thing we've learned through the process is that, you know, until we're home with Jesus, we're going to be broken. We're broken people. And that has been kind of the saving grace for us through the whole recovery process over the last 7+ years, is we never get to a place in our relationship, my wife and I, where we say we're not broken, because we're imperfect. We're always in a constant state of need from God, from one another. And that has really been probably the fundamental thing that we have learned through this process, which is the primary reason why our ministry is named Be Broken Ministries. Because the first and most crucial fundamental step toward recovery is brokenness.
Now, that makes sense to me about you. And when you say she also stepped in, recognized brokenness, what would she say was her brokenness?
Well, her brokenness, I think, in some ways, and she said it this way before, was pride. See, she had, in many ways, kind of believed her own press about being the perfect Christian girl and kind of having it all together and never having to face certain problems, because she'd kind of lived in this bubble. And that kind of built a sense of pride in her where, in a sense, she views it as, in some ways, God putting her together with a man who is going to test that pride, who is going to show her, you know what, you don't have the white picket fence marriage, you don't have the happy ever after knight in shining armor. You know what? You have a mess on your hands. And it kind of broke her down to see that she could not continue to walk in that false piety of saying, I've got it all nailed down. I can believe what all these people are saying about me because I've had this image for so many years. And I think that was some of her brokenness. Also, I think her brokenness involved just the decisions that she was going to have to make about, because, you know, she had every right, if you want to look at it in a legal sense, she had every right to get out, to not continue in the marriage with me. And so her brokenness, I think, also involved, was she willing to let herself remain in a situation, remain in a relationship with someone who she will never have control over, someone who she can never totally, you know, be in control of, and yet still love him, still be involved with him. You know, that was a difficult part of the healing process.
Yeah, and I wanted to go over those steps you went through when you were describing what your wife had to go through and see if I have them right. Probably shock and disbelief is the first one, and then deep grieving and, you know, having to wrestle through with God and herself and some of her own beliefs, deep grieving, then forgiveness, then followed by rebuilding. Does that sound close?
Yeah, I think sometimes, somewhat in the shock phase of that, also there's a lot of anger.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think there was, because she definitely said many times, "How could you do this to me?" You know, so there was like kind of a lashing out, an anger that was kind of simultaneous with the shock and the disbelief
and the grief too. I mean,
right.
You shake your fist at heaven. How could this happen? I've been such a good girl all my life, and
but see,
where
what,
were you? Right? I mean, there's a lot of thrashing around as you work through this.
And what my wife would say is the critical point in that process was the grief. If she did not get to the point where she really grieved that, you know, that something had died in our relationship, then she never really could have gotten to the place where she finally accepted and forgave.
Mm.
So even more critical than the forgiveness was the grief.
Do you think at some point you could invite her on the show and just ask her to review the process that she had to go through?
You bet. I'm sure she'd be happy to do that. She's been instrumental in helping a lot of women kind of see things in a new perspective. Because, see, one of the things that she experienced that I think a lot of, not just women, but a lot of Christians experience when there's been a break in trust in any relationship,
yes,
is we are quick as Christians to tell somebody, forgive. You need to forgive. You need to forgive. And while that is true, you don't just jump to forgiveness. There has to be pain felt. There has to be grief experienced.
The other person, you mean?
No, by the one who's needing to offer forgiveness.
Ah, you have to go through your own healing process.
You know, and what I try to do with people is I try to, you know, I tell them, look at Jesus. You know, the decision that he made to go through the process of forgiving us involved pain.
Right.
It involved grief. It involved it wasn't like there was this kind of like knee-jerk reaction. He had to feel the offense against him of our sin before he was able, or before he could get to that place of saying, "You're forgiven." There was a payment, a penalty, there was pain to be felt. And I think a lot of us as Christians, we're too quick to try to get that person who's been offended to just, yeah, but just forgive, forgive, forgive. And if they jump to forgiveness in you know, if they go through this conversation with somebody to say, "I forgive you," but they haven't ever really gone through the grief process, then I guarantee you that particular offense will come up again. And see, what I have been so fortunate in my marriage is my wife went through that grief process, so that now when she is in this perpetual state of forgiveness of me, she's not having to go back to that offense that was done before. In fact, forgiveness, if you think about it, and this is why it was such a difficult process for my wife had to say, you know, in order for her to get to a place where she forgave me for all my unfaithfulness to her, she had to get to a place where she could look at me and say, "When I tell you that I forgive you, this means that I will never hold that against you again." And see, what a lot of folks want to do is they want to say in their words, "I forgive you," but they're hanging on. That's like their, you know, that's like their chip. You know, they're hanging on to that chip to play later in case the heat gets turned up. And my wife, by extending forgiveness, she said, "I'll never hold that against you again." And you know what, Stephen? She has never brought it up again.
Wow.
I mean, she's never brought it up in the sense of to use it against me. We've certainly had conversations where our emotions from the past have come up.
Wow.
But she has truly forgiven me, where she is never, I've never once heard her say anything to the extent of, yeah, you remember when you did this, and like nail me with it. She's truly forgiven. And I think it's mainly because she went through that grief process.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. And so we probably have to have some discussions about grief and forgiveness. I mean, there's some, even though we hear these terms, I think they're deep and powerful and healing kind of terms. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes throw them around or take them too quick or don't know what they mean.
Well, and before we finish this particular broadcast, I want to talk a little bit about legacy, because I know there are listeners out there who are trapped, who are where I have been, where you've got, you're living that double divided life, you're living that secret life, and anytime somebody brings up the idea of legacy or your mark that you're going to leave on the world, you just kind of internally roll your eyes and you just let out this sigh of disgust because you think, I'm not leaving a legacy. If anything, I'm leaving a black mark on my family and my kids, and because I'm involved in this garbage. I just want to give hope to those men, to the guys who are feeling trapped, feeling like they don't have anything to offer. I'm here to tell you that as God has really changed my life and completely restructured my thinking and my priorities, he has granted a new hope for a legacy. He's given me and my wife three beautiful kids. And every day, I think, as I look at those kids, I'm investing. I'm investing something in them. And I have a choice. Do I want to invest the truth? Do I want to invest honesty? Do I want to invest purity in them? Or am I going to invest lies, secrecy, shame? And it's a choice that we have. And the good news is that no matter what point you are in your life, you still have a choice. You have a choice today of whether or not you're gonna take that brave leap and climb over that wall that you've created that has now got you trapped in, and you're going to climb over and you're going to say, here's the truth. Here's what's going on. You're going to talk to your wife. You're going to get a counselor. You're going to plug into a group, and you're going to say, I want to leave a different legacy. I don't want to do something that is going to continue hurting my family, going to continue hurting the future of my grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And also the fact that when God takes something that is broken, that's worn out, that's in bad shape, he can take that and he can use it for good. If somebody had told me 10 years ago that I'd be sitting here right now doing this, I probably wouldn't have even laughed. I would have just had a blank stare at whoever was telling me that, because I would have thought...
And you would be screaming stupid in your head. That's insane. How could you possibly think that?
There's no way. And yet God can take anything, any relationship, any addiction, anything, and he can turn around and use it for good. I even think of the... we've mentioned in previous broadcasts about the many females who've been abused. And I think of that passage with Joseph in Genesis and his brothers. His brothers sold him into slavery. They abused him, ridiculed him. And yet God used that situation to raise up Joseph to save thousands upon thousands of people who would have died because of a famine. But because God raised up Joseph in the position that he put him in, saved countless lives. And then when he was reunited with his brothers were scared to death. And yet Joseph looked at them and said, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. And I think of that in terms of all the women out there who have been abused. So many have meant for evil against you, and yet God can take that and still turn it for your good, can still turn it for the good of countless others who maybe need to hear your story, who need to hear that they can rub shoulders with you and lock arms and be supported and encouraged. And so I just want to end this broadcast by reminding those of you who are trapped, who are feeling alone and scared, that you can change the destiny of your legacy. You can change your family tree in the sense of offering hope and truth and purity to future generations in your family.
And I back up to earlier in the program, the wall that was built brick by brick, built tall and built thick, has to be dismantled, and others have to be allowed to come in and help. And we have to move from the secrecy into fellowship and community and support. And I hope that's who you see, or what you see be broken. Let me try that again. That is what Be Broken is about, is offering help and hope and healing.
Well, folks, it's time for this week's Real Answer to Real Question. And it comes from a wife, and I wanted to mention this in this particular broadcast because we get a lot of questions from wives after they've found out about their husband's sexual addiction. And this woman contacted us, and she had just gotten a divorce, unfortunately, and her husband had many affairs, and he, you know, even admitted to having a sexual addiction, but he ended up leaving her for another woman that he'd had an affair with. And her question to us is, could her husband be happy and faithful to this other woman without getting any help? You know, she says he's become so angry towards her, and she just feels like he's turned into a monster. And she's crushed. And she says, I even wonder if things would have been different if I were prettier. And so I want to share my response that I gave to this woman, and hopefully it will encourage any of you wives out there listening who maybe are in a similar situation. Your husband's deep in his sexual addiction. He's not getting any help, and you wonder, could he actually be happy with another woman if he doesn't get any help? Could he be faithful to her? And would things have been different if I were prettier? Well, first of all, I respond and say, no, your husband will not be happy by continuing to run from his problems and masking them with sexually addictive behaviors. He's going to carry the same underlying issues of deception, shame, and self-centeredness with him, no matter where he goes. These don't go away until a man is willing to get honest with himself and truly be broken of the stronghold of pride and lust. You know, nothing I could say could erase any of the heartache that this woman or any of you listening might be experiencing. It hurts. But I will say this, that it is not your fault. It is not your fault that he has this addiction. Many men want to blame their wives for their addiction by claiming that they have a high sex drive or that their wives aren't pretty enough. Baloney. Absolute baloney. I've known men married to supermodels who are sexually addicted, and they still cheat on their wives. Physical beauty in a wife is not the issue. Lust is the issue. My prayer for this woman and my prayer for you who are listening is that you'll surround yourself with people who will speak truth into your life and affirm your worth and value for who you are. Your beauty, your true beauty, is something no one can steal from you because it's measured by God's standard. And God said you are worth sending his son to the cross to pay the penalty that you owed so that you could receive life that never ends. This is the measure of your true worth. Cling to such truth as you move through the difficult process of healing from wounded emotions and broken dreams. God will be faithful to walk with you during this time. Well, folks, I don't think we could do this broadcast without mentioning to you some great resources that we have for wives. One resource that we want to offer to you today is our handbook for hurting wives. This handbook is designed for women. It's designed to help women understand how to work with a sexually struggling spouse. And what this workbook will do is it's going to provide insight and understanding regarding your spouse's struggle, It'll also provide ideas and techniques to use when confronting your spouse. It even provides a roadmap to evaluate appropriate steps for restoration and recovery. And finally, it has a guide to promote spiritual and emotional growth. It contains a devotional guide along with it. And we want to offer this handbook to anyone who contacts our ministry and mentions that they heard it on the broadcast today for only $10 per workbook. Normally, it's $17.95. And we want to offer it to you today for $10. And as a bonus, we're going to provide you with a CD that we have called Words for a Woman's Soul. And this CD has already blessed countless women who have heard it. And this CD basically helps a woman in all walks of life that just need to be reminded that you are precious in God's sight. And it's got a unique blend of music and also some words of encouragement. And this CD, just to take a quote from my own wife who listened to it, she said, "This CD is like healing balm for a woman's raw, wounded heart. It will bring you hope, comfort, and encouragement." So today, if you will call us or email us, please do so today, and we will give you our Handbook for Hurting Wives for only $10. And we will also throw in with it the Words for a Woman's Soul. So all of you women who would like to be encouraged and just be comforted, these are some incredible resources that are going to help you in your journey of healing. So call in today.
Thanks for listening to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial contributions of listeners like you. Please send your notes and donations to Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas 78217. Again, the mailing address is 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. You may also reach us by phone toll-free at 1-800-49-PURITY. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-497-8748. Our website is a great resource for archived broadcasts, helpful resources, and secure donations. Simply visit www.puresexradio.com for more information. That wraps up our time together on this week's Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We look forward to having you back next time when we again tackle real-life struggles with lust, porn, and sex addiction. Until then, remember, the price you pay today for purity is a bargain compared to the pain it costs if you put it off.